Running Wild with Christine, sex, success, and other slippery rabbit holes. Welcome to episode 18, Are We Not Men? So today we are here with James.
Hi.
Hi, James. How are you?
I'm good. I've had a pint and a half of Guinness, so I'm sufficiently lubricated.
Lovely. I've had a half cider
upside
and in. Two glasses of bubbles at lunch.
Perfect. So good.
We're on the same level.
You can tell it's writers hanging out in the daytime.
Yes, exactly. So, James, do you want to tell everyone a little bit more about yourself, what you do as an intro?
Yep. I am a professional writer and occasional journalist. My speciality is writing about Japanese and Asian culture for the website and app Culture Trip. But I also write about music on the side. And for pocket money, I do content writing and I host pub quizzes. That's a new thing.
Yeah.
And that is me in a nutshell.
Nice. Maybe we can also do the typical thing that we do and say how we met. So we met pretty much day to day 4 months ago.
Yep.
I was here launching Just Bad Timing in London. And our common friend, Joe, shout out to Joe. Hi.
Sure. Hi, Joe.
Introduced us just a couple days before my launch.
Yeah.
It's like a writer's date.
It was.
We met up at the, what was the name of that place?
Satan's Whiskers. In Bethnal Green. I thoroughly recommend their cocktails.
Yes. And the name is just wicked. So we had like two or three deadly cocktails.
Mm.
And yeah, hung out ever since.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was lovely.
It was a fun evening.
We proceeded. Did you come to the club with us after the launch party?
I didn't know. I was sick as a dog.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Oh, my gosh. You missed quite the hilarious outing in Mayfair.
So I'm told, but still. There'll be more hilarious outings to come.
Yes, I hope so. Oh, my God. I want to spend so much more time in London. Let's make this happen, guys. Get me jobs in London.
Make it happen. Send your donations.
So today we wanted to talk about toxic masculinity.
Yes.
Because that is something that's dear to you after you read a seminal book, in your opinion. So do you want to...
I did, yeah. I read, I think it was late 2016, a friend of a friend turned me onto it. I remember we all went to see a film at the cinema and my friend's friend was reading it as she was waiting for us. The book, The Descent of Man by Grayson Perry.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when I read it, was in hardback, but is now in paperback. And reading that book proved to be revelatory for me.
Did it now? Tell me in which sense. So
well,
what was
the, it? it's about generally it's about toxic masculinity, but it's about recognizing how destructive it is for society as a whole. And ways in which we can remedy it. And not just through creating awareness, but also by creating more dialogues. It's a fascinating book. I'd strongly recommend it to anyone listening to this because it's not just an informative, interesting book. It's just a really good read. Like,
yeah.
It's got a good way with words. It's really well written. It's a really slim volume. I think it's like 200 pages or something.
Yeah.
But it's incredibly... direct without being blunt or hostile. And there's the added bonus that if you do read it, you get to look really intellectual and sexy at the next dinner party. You can say, I've just read The Descent of Man. And
Or on the tube.
Did you know that 90% of all violent crime is committed by men? And everyone just nods around the dinner table like, oh God, that's really interesting.
But more than the actual like read itself. So you were saying that when we were prepping for this episode, that for you it was sort of this revelation because it was something that you had experienced in your life without ever having a term for it or knowing how to...
Yeah, it's something I've been aware of since adolescence, I guess. There was... some of my experiences mirrored the ones that Grayson Perry was describing. He was talking about how he knew that he was attracted to women and that he was a very sexual person and enjoyed intimacy and affection. But he also knew that he didn't fit into the classic archetype of how a man should act in those situations. And not only that, the behavior that he saw taking place around him, he just found really, really horrible. And just reading that book was such an eye-opener for me, because he was describing experiences that I thought that, well, it's just me having that.
Yeah.
Not because I think that I'm like exceptional or singular, but just because I was just thinking, well, I'm just a bit odd, really, aren't I? I'm just a bit of a weirdo.
It's like writer's definition.
Yeah, completely, completely. It's just me on my island of one suffering. And he says that, I really hope people read the book, so I wouldn't want to go on about it too much.
Oh, because there's no such thing as a spoiler.
Well, he says that the problem isn't with men, and the problem isn't even with masculinity. It's about a certain type of masculinity that's been handed down over the centuries as the, not the acceptable way to behave, but the definitive way to behave.
Yeah.
If you're a man, you have to carry yourself a certain way. You have to
care about sports.
You have to care about sports. You have to want to be sexually, at the very least, sexually dominant. Assertive, sexually
yeah.
dominant, yeah,
yeah,
completely. And he makes the point that invariably all of the classic traits of toxic masculinity are just invariably covering up for someone's chronic insecurity. And the more sensible and the more healthy thing is to admit your insecurity to yourself and then set about working on it rather than burying it beneath this this facade, or hiding it behind this facade of just being a massive fucking dick.
Yeah.
And then just reading that, it completely opened my eyes, and it was like the Matrix or something. I started to see the world around me differently.
Yeah.
Tiny little things.
Like what?
Like, well, the two things that spring the most to mind is I remember last summer I went to Cornwall for a mini camping holiday, and it was with a group of friends who gather in the same field every year to hang out, you know, kind of go to the sea, go to the beach, go drinking, sit around the campfire, that kind of thing. And I remember there was one afternoon when we'd all been to the beach together and then we all came back. And then at one point, this clutch of men, some of whom were good friends, all got together and decided they were going to go fishing by themselves. Like this little pod of men were going to go fishing by themselves. And these are men with partners. In some cases, they were married. In some cases, they had children. And they all strode off, rods slung over their shoulders. Well, the women, to catch food for dinner, this is the big thing, to catch fish for dinner, while the women stayed on the campsite and made side salads and tended to the children. And I remember really noticing all of this and thinking a bunch of stuff. I remember thinking, number one, did they invite anyone else besides the boys?
Yeah.
And if they did, maybe I just was in the toilet at that time when that happened. Number two, why were they all going fishing together in a big group of men? And there could be numerous reasons. They could just really enjoy fishing. Maybe they did ask their partner or wife, because, you know what, I'm going to stay here and I'm just going to fucking chop some radishes or whatever. I can't be asked. You know, maybe nothing wrong with, you know, wanting to engage with a hobby or something that brings you
joy.
Yeah, joy. But I wasn't picking up on any of that at the time. And then they all came back completely empty-handed later in the evening. And it was, I just remember thinking, well, that's just fucking shit. Like, you went off to do your comical little hunter-gatherer activity and you can't even fucking, and maybe, you know, unsustainability or there's too much fishing under current EU regulation or whatever. I don't know anything about EU regulation regarding fishing, but
basically the point is we're all overfishing.
Yeah, we're all overfishing. So it's more about why is this happening and under what parameters, rather than it's like, do you know what, fuck all these men fishing, we need to get more sitters involved, because that's just not, it's not for me to assume the worst case scenario in terms of what another group of dudes are doing.
Yeah, but it just is definitive, I think, of like the norm.
Yeah.
If anything.
Yeah, all the men are going fishing, they're all wearing check shirts, they've all got their rods slung over their shoulders.
You're describing every single camping trip I've ever taken.
Well, and I may just be being embittered because they definitely didn't ask me.
Yeah.
Partly because I don't know how to fish and I probably would suck at it, but that's not the point!
That's not the point.
And the second example that springs to mind is, this isn't, and that's not toxic male behaviour by any standard, but it is about noticing a certain type of masculinity that to me feels like it's excluding people.
Yeah, but like that brings like a few questions to mind for me, because I'm typically invited as a woman to all those things.
Mm. And maybe this
for
is the thing.
Some weird reason.
I wasn't privy to every conversation. They could have said, like, babe, do you want to come with me? And
they
would have said, no, I can't be asked doing that. I just want to read my book.
But did they, when they came back empty-handed, were they like disappointed, or were they like, what was the attitude? They weren't
despondent. They weren't kind of like kicking over bins or anything. They were just a bit like disappointed. If anything, it was quite farcical. Because they made a big point of, well, they didn't make a big point. In my, as I perceive it, it felt like a big deal. They're all going off together. And then when they came back empty-handed, it was more just like shrugging, like, yeah, I didn't catch any fish. And the second, I think the second thing is recognizing, the second example has to do with just unintentionally enabling toxic masculine behavior. So I remember one of my female friends who loves live music and goes to a lot of gigs and spends, she's got a fair number of friends in bands. So she moves in those circles, and she posted this thing on Facebook about how she had a really horrific encounter with this one particular guy in a band who, as she tells it, sexually assaulted her. Mm-hmm. And then I was discussing it with my then housemate at the time, and he said to me that as a woman moving in those circles, she should know better.
Ooh.
Because this is what he said.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even coming at it from a kind of I'm just going to use a horrific broad generalization. Not coming at it from a she was asking for it kind of angle. He was, because he loves live music too, and he knows that dudes in bands can be a bit sketchy sometimes. Some dudes, not all dudes, just some dudes. He said that she should have known better than to mix in those circles, because men in, if a guy gets you on his tour bus at 3 a.m, he's going to want to fucking bang your brains out. Instead of saying, well,
he's going to want to, sure.
Yeah, he's going to want to, but how's
let
he,
himself?
Yeah, how does he go about it?
Yeah.
And there was an incident recently in Australia, and I annoyingly, I can't remember the name of the victim, but a young woman, and do a fact check on this just in case I'm wrong, put it in the show notes, but a young woman was, I think, raped and murdered. She was a stand-up comic. She was killed in this park. Where was it? It was one of the major Australian cities. And there was a warning going out afterwards for young women just to watch themselves on the way home, but there was no kind of like, you know,
don't
to all the men out there, don't rape and murder women, because that's fucking horrifying. And I think we've just come to accept this whole boys will be boys bullshit.
Yeah.
And that really, really does my head in. And I think one of the reasons the book resonated with me is because I was, at the time, I was like bullied at school for, I was teased for being gay. I didn't want to play
sports.
Which
you aren't.
Because, well, it's, you know, I don't consider myself gay.
Yeah.
But I do find it interesting that, you know, if you don't, and this is back in the fucking, when was it, like the late 80s, early 90s, that if you don't play sports, if you don't want to go on the pool regularly, if you don't want to get fucked on booze and drugs, you are somehow considered less of a man for doing so. Mm. In the present day, as a fucking struggling writer, as a kind of writer in under challenging economic circumstances, I fucking love drinking and I love random encounters and illicit nights out and that kind of thing. But I enjoy those on their own merits.
Consciously.
And, you know, I wore glasses and I got teased for that. And there is, have you seen the film Idiocracy?
No.
The Mike Judge film, it's brilliant. It's set in a few, this guy undergoes, he volunteers for a scientific experiment where he's frozen for what he thinks is going to be a short period. But the experiment goes wrong and he wakes up in America of the not too distant future where everyone's turned into a moron. And because he's articulate and well-spoken, everyone thinks he's gay. And I do find there's that really interesting link between, there's a certain strain of intellectualism that's just synonymous with being at the least a fucking weirdo and at the best a, well, homosexual.
Yeah, and I think all those stereotypical gender and sexual orientation assigned characteristics are just, they're just so, like, on a academic level, not on an obviously social level, but on an academic level are so interesting.
Yeah.
In the sense that they all spurt back to strands of either toxic masculinity or radical feminism or, you know, any sort of radical strain of thought or categorization of people depending on how they present themselves or how they act. And it's just, for me, that you know, now we're so conscious of being like, let's not generalize, let's not, you know, you have to sort of give these disclaimers when you speak. And it's just, it's such a shame that we still cannot get to speaking about people as individuals.
Yeah,
you
exactly,
know what I mean?
Exactly. There's
like, you have to label it somehow.
Yeah.
And the more we realize how toxic the labels are, the more we label.
Yeah. Yeah, we're addicted to labeling at the moment.
It's horrifying. I hate it. And that's why I think it's important to, like, remember that when we're discussing something like toxic masculinity, because essentially it's a label. like the coined term.
Yeah.
But on a personal level, I think that, like, what do you think that it changed in your understanding of your own masculinity after you've read it? Like, did it, do you now address that with people who are displaying toxic signs of masculine attributes, like, towards you, or, because you were like, oh, this is a funny, in your two examples, you have sort of an anecdote that isn't shocking, and then the second one, which is horrific.
Yeah.
Are you now, as an individual, after sort of coming to realize what is happening, are you changing your behavior in some of the things that we might do that enable that kind of behavior?
Yeah, definitely.
What does that look like?
Well, the thing is, to me, it's more about, it's a lot of it to do, for my part, a lot of it has to do with processing and then questioning. Because if you're aware of toxic masculinity, and if you can see it almost everywhere, you're very aware that this is something that's endemic to, certainly to Western society, and it goes back a very, 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 very long way. And there's people out there who may be acting like this without even realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Toxic masculinity isn't, I don't think it's necessarily something that you buy into. I think it's something...
This is one of those things that we need to start being conscious about, which is, I'm starting to hate the word because we use it all the time, but you just think it's the only way. Like, it's not even a choice that you're given.
Yeah, this is it.
That's what I am. That's what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, completely. To me, it's about challenging things, and this is very important, about challenging things within reasoned terms. Like, I think discourse is really important.
Mm-hmm.
I think the changes will come about subtly and in very, 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 very gradual increments, because that's just how life works. You very rarely see a sea change overnight.
Change is hard.
Change is very hard. And I'm not advocating that a bunch of men meet up in a pub and all sit round a table agonizing over their feelings, because that's navel gazing, isn't it?
It depends.
I guess it depends, but I, full disclosure on my part, you know, because my experiences have been so singular, sometimes I've felt reluctance to challenge what's around me, because I think, well, what if this is just me being me? Like, what if there isn't a problem?
But there is.
Well, there clearly is. There clearly is. And so I feel a lot more comfortable now challenging it moving forward.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't present myself as any kind of paragon of virtue. and also, challenging people takes energy and it's hard. And that's no reason to abstain from it whatsoever.
But I'm going to link you with Adam, the person who was on last week's podcast, because he was actually suggesting, and you won't have heard it because we taped it yesterday, but it was published last week for those listening. He was saying that, because we were talking about feminism from a male's perspective, that he's actually thinking of a way of creating a sort of men's support system.
Right.
He's reluctant to calling it a man's club or a group or anything because of the things that go with it. But I was saying, and I've said this in many episodes, that, you know, as women, we've been socialized into sharing our emotions with each other. And for men, it's much more difficult to have a sort of trusting setting to divulge emotional information outside of a relationship.
Yeah, totally. I think you're made to feel as if there's literally nowhere you can go.
Yeah, and that's horrible.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
I've just contradicted what I've just said about the men sitting around a pub table. But it's fine, because I'm learning. I'm learning on the go.
No, but this is the whole thing. Like, you shouldn't, like, I think everything is, like, in small increments. It's exactly like you said, starting with a text to a friend saying, hey, can I run this thing by you that's been, like, messing with my head?
Or,
you know, like, just whatever the steps look like for you, whatever's most easiest for you. And I think we do this, like, you and I. Like, you'll be like, okay, let me share this thought that I've written down, like, what you think, which, you know, it's, as writers, it's easy because we can be like, look what I wrote, like, it's a convenient excuse to be like,
so I'm gonna call attention to this incredibly insightful, witty paragraph that I've just concocted.
Exactly, which we would never say, because we're both like, look at this crap I wrote.
totally.
but you still have sort of a pretext.
Yeah,
and I always call my book the pretext to have a conversation.
Yeah, totally.
But we shouldn't really need it, you know? It should just be like, hey, can I borrow your brain for a minute, or your heart for a minute, whatever is on my mind, to bounce things back and forth, because that's healthy.
Yeah.
And we all have feelings.
Yeah.
Despite
yeah, yeah, yeah.
how hard we try to portray that we don't.
No, I agree. And the thoughts just occur to me that, like, however you identify, I think confidence is an attractive quality in a person.
Mm.
Someone who more or less has their shit together and knows what they want. I think the trouble is the ways in which confidence can manifest themselves when you're a man can be, well, fucking horrifying, to be honest. I think one thing I'm really aware of is the ways in which we're all legitimizing horrifying behavior. If you look at people like Trump, if you look at people like Nigel Farage, and even like going back as far as Adolf Hitler, we treat these people as dynamic we treat these people as dynamic personalities, as quote unquote great men, great in the historical sense. Not as the in terms of their moral fiber. And ultimately what these people are is extraordinarily destructive individuals who are just out for their own ends because they have a fucking chip on their shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so little, it's easy to challenge someone's behavior when you belong to
the same group.
Yeah, well, this is it. So I think it's absolutely crucial that the dialogue spreads to all aspects of society, whether you're, however you identify, politically, economically, socially, religiously, ethnically,
sexually,
gender-wise. Yeah, gender-wise, because it's, and I've said this to you when we were prepping for this, Carter. Yeah, Angela Carter. She said that she felt that what was bad for women was bad for men in the long run.
Yeah.
And I know we're going by a binary dynamic, but I do think in terms of all of humanity, if you're letting toxic male egos run rampant, which is essentially what we're doing, even people who are fucking retweeting Donald Trump are essentially just perpetuating the brand. And whether it's an outrage or
sympathizing,
I still feel it's equally shitty. I mean,
to give them space.
What we should be doing is reaching out to the people that feel that these are somehow valid politicians or valid political presences or great men for whatever reason, and asking them why they think that.
Or great people.
Yeah, or great people. I don't know. I don't know if any of this is making sense, what I'm saying.
No, I mean, it is totally making sense in the sense that I think we've basically talked about the same thing from sort of an individual versus a social perspective, in the sense that on an individual level, it can be, toxic masculinity can be quote unquote undone by raising the issue of expressing your emotions, expressing your feelings, self-awareness, self-confidence, self whatever needs, what, you know, whichever side of that toxicity is appropriate on the opposite side.
Yeah.
Again, working in binaries, which I don't like, but for convenience sake.
Yeah.
And then on a social sort of macro level, looking at it from the perspective of history and politics is just, it's essentially the same thing, is like not letting those appearances or the way we've done things until now be the defining measure for anything.
Yeah.
At any level.
Yeah. Questioning precedent, I think, is really important.
Yeah. And questioning current state of things more than precedent, because I think there's a lot to be said about the fact that we memorize and we memorialize a lot of history by saying this looks like this, or this is what we're doing, or like comparing current state to pre-World War II and all that stuff. I think that's interesting on an academic level, but ultimately not the best use of our time at the minute, because we have things that we can change in the same way that we were saying with Adam last week, of like, okay, you want equal pay for men and women. That is something practical we can work towards.
Yeah.
You don't want pictures taken under your skirt. That is something we can talk, like, work towards. Like, it's practical little things that we can actually start to implement, hopefully, to work towards a future that doesn't look like pre-World War II or, you know, things that we've seen in the past. Yes, life is cyclical and all of that. I'm not going to undo things, but
I guess you don't want to perpetuate cyclical shittiness. And this leads me to another point about that Grayson Perry book, is that he does actually have the facts on his side. And I think this is really important as well, about rolling out the facts to back up your argument, because ultimately you're just going off of anecdote and experience. He points out that according to this statistics that he's going by, which are relatively recent, he says that 90%, this is in the UK, 90% of all violent crime is committed by men. That's stunning.
And yet the discourse is still careful women.
Yeah, precisely. And he's, and this is one of the things I remember. It was like, it was it's like a heated brand that was just seared onto my brain when he said it. He said that over history, in any sphere, women have the reputation as the more hysterical sex. And there's that.
I mean, history is a feminine term. Like, it's coined to apply only to women.
So there's that. And then also there's, you know, there's that really poisonous archetype that men like to roll out. Some men like to roll up. And again, going binary here. But just for the sake of a podcast, because otherwise we'd be here for a long time. And it's a shame we're not. But anyway.
We will have a...
She's on her period. She's lost her fucking mind. Yeah. And...
I wish we could say that about Trump, you know.
Well,
he's been on a very long streak of PMSing at the minute.
he's subject to something, I don't know what it is. it's nightmarish. It's like it's like some kind of like crypto fascist dementia or something. But anyway. So yeah, women have a reputation as the hysterical sex. They're always being controlled by their emotions. They feel rather than they think, blah 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 blah. And Grayson Perry points out there's this archetype, but he says if you contrast that with a certain model of male behavior, he says if you look at the majority of wars, if not all of them really, not all of wars, that's unfair to say that, but the majority of wars, economic catastrophe, environmental disaster, he says if you trace it to anyone, whether it's a general or a president or a CEO. Almost all of these disasters are instigated by men. And he says that's just a fact. Like, that's not him generalizing for the sake of making a point. And that, and again, that's something that's really, really, really interesting. As I perceive it, I grew up in a fairly buffeted sphere of awareness. You know, my parents, who I love to absolute death, but they're fairly conservative in their outlook, with a big and a small C. They voted Tory for every single election over the last couple of decades.
You say that with a defeated look on your face.
Well, I do, because they're partly the reason I'm having trouble finding a place to live in London, but we won't go there. I'd take a bullet for either of them without even thinking about it.
Of course.
But it's... Oh God, what was my point? Yeah. I went down my own rabbit hole of ego.
Yeah, well, this is what we're here for, rabbit holes. But you were saying that basically...
Yeah, we just accept things the way they are. And we like to create these fanatical cults of personality.
Yes.
Around certain individuals because we think it's aspirational. Like, now, there seems to be, like, everyone wants to be Steve Jobs, the late Steve Jobs. If you look at tech presentations, it's some fucker in an unbuttoned shirt or a turtleneck walking calmly back and forth across the stage with a huge backdrop in the background. You know, everyone loves the idea of the cool, fucking tech.
Respected.
Yeah, respected tech. And there is, I'm going to paint some very broad strokes here, but I really feel like there's three archetypes at the moment for men and women to fit into. You're either a Steve Jobs, a Donald Trump, or Gwyneth Paltrow. You're not allowed to deviate from any of those if you want to be respected. You're either doing fucking yoga on the beach against the sunset, you're kicking ass, you're just being honest. And I think just being honest is another means of enabling toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And it comes back to this thing of just wanting to question things, because sometimes you can be fucking confident about the fact that you feel like you built the best computer and you want to present it to investors and the general public.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, if you go by every horror story that you've heard about Steve Jobs, he was
a shitty person.
Well, he appeared to be a fairly monstrous individual. And then even people like, I was watching The Shining last night for some reason. I got home drunk after 4th of July barbecue and started watching The Shining. The stories about Stanley Kubrick being an extraordinarily difficult artistic collaborator, these stories are legion.
Yeah.
And poor old Shelley Long, I think is the name of the actress, her hair was falling out. Because of how he tormented her on the set of The Shining. And take after take after take after take after take. And he got this... The end result was this very withering, pathetic character who obviously the audience is meant to turn on. This isn't meant to be anyone we're supposed to empathise with.
Yeah.
I mean, Kubrick was a weirdo anyway. There was definitely something wrong with him, I think. He's a great filmmaker, but the way his methodology was heavily flawed. And then also you hear about... actors on sets, and I was reading an interview with Rose McGowan, and she pointed out that, according to her, in all her years, she's never, ever, ever met a female method actor. She's never met any female actor who's embedded themselves in the role so completely that they just can't break character. And she says that she feels that men engage in method acting as license to be a dick to people. And it just makes perfect sense, because it's, oh, he's a difficult man, but, you know, the end result is worth it. I don't know why you can't just be like fucking Jennifer Lawrence or Meryl Streep. Show up, do your fucking job, recite your lines, go home.
Yeah.
And this whole thing of like, well, no, I really have to, I have to challenge the medium, I have to challenge the craft, I have to challenge my, you know, the people around me. There's this whole idea that
That has to be a show, and then that has to be about you. And I think that's like mainly the issue as well. Like with it traces back to toxic masculinity and other concepts along the lines of like the entire system that we have, like our frame of thought, like the way that we read articles online or the way that we engage with current discourse on any topic is basically based on extremes or shocking information or things that will attract your eye to it. And this is exactly why I wanted this podcast to be like this, so that it's clear that we have a hard time articulating these things. Like, we're struggling to use the right words or the right pronouns and to say the things that we're trying to say, and we're losing ourselves in rabbit holes because it's difficult to articulate things when you're not being like extreme, when you're not saying this is the way, how you do it, this is what a good performances, this is what good art is. No, like, that's not how things are, because we're all individuals and we all have our experiences and we all build only on our experiences, if anything.
Yeah.
That's the only things we know for sure.
And context is really important as well.
But individual context, I think. Yeah. Because we just say like, oh, but you don't know the backstory. Then let's know the backstory, you know? Like, let's look into it. Completely. What is it? Why? Like, what's this reluctancy to working off of questions and not statements? Why do we need certainty always at all cost?
Well, certainty is sexy. Doubt gets a bad rap, but I guess breaking away from the main topic, I think doubt is completely healthy. And I feel like certainty isn't, we don't always need to place this huge premium on it, like, you know, just go with your gut.
No, I think if anything, it's toxic. Well, go with your gut, I don't have a problem with, because your gut as a definition is flawed. You don't know. You don't know why you're making the decision.
No, that's a good point.
You know, that I don't have a problem with, because that's like, I just felt like it. I felt like that was the right thing.
But I feel now the gut has become sacred as this decision-making tool. As according to, but again, you know, that comes back to fucking semantics, and go with your gut is now shorthand for trust your instincts. Yeah. And instincts, like everything else, are imperfect.
Yeah. So it's actually fundamentally contradictory.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree.
And that's okay. I don't think that's a negative. And coming back to the topic, I think that's where a lot of the toxic masculinity as a cover for your own insecurities is the same exact thing.
This is the big thing. And Grayson Perry makes a point in the book that essentially it's just lots of scared little boys hurting deep down inside. And I think that's true 100%.
Yeah.
There is like... Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that if you're not someone who displays toxic masculine behavior, that you're not a dick. You can be a dick in completely different ways.
Oh, yeah. Like, dicks come in all shapes and sizes and genders. No, they do, though. That's the thing. It's like, no.
They do. It's just funny in the context of my book.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, just to say that I think... I mean, I can't remember what my point was.
Dicks come in all shapes and sizes.
Yeah. I think it's... I think one thing that's crucial about toxic masculinity is if there is a toxic masculinity, then by the same standard, there must be a toxic femininity. Mm-hmm. But I am in no fucking position to talk about that.
Neither am I.
But I guess, you know, you can go as wide as you want, but I guess starting with a singular topic, you know, and as someone growing up who didn't have many friends, and then you develop a lot of female friends, and then for me it wasn't on purpose. I wasn't collecting them like they were Pokemon. I just found myself gravitating towards female company more naturally. And this is another thing I thought about a lot after reading the book, is the difference between when men talk about sex and when women talk about sex.
Go on.
Conversations I've had with men about sex, which have been few and far between, it's all about, or at least my feeling was that it was all about notches on bedposts, and you're talking about your prowess.
I tapped that.
And yeah, yeah, that. Yeah. And the merits therein about your extraordinary prowess as a lover. And I remember the first ever time I was in a group of women who were talking frankly about sex. It was like going to see fucking stand-up comedy or something.
It is.
Was, because it was really anecdotal. It was really joyful. They were disclosing all manner of intimate details, but you know, I just remember lots of women like with a fucking like throwing back heroic quantities of Malbec and just bursting out laughing every now and again, because it felt a lot more celebratory.
Heroic quantities of Malbec.
Yeah, that's what it was. What it was. And again, like there's fucking, you know, I've talked about sex with male friends, and it's I'd be loath to wander into demonization, you know.
Oh.
I really would, though, because we're in it together as a species.
Yeah.
And this isn't about, you know, if anything, I want to fucking encourage healthy masculinity.
Yeah, but that's sort of, I mean, on the converse side of your experience, I've had a lot of guy friends.
Right.
And, I mean, I've had a lot of girlfriends also and pounded back heroic quantities of Malbec on a regular.
Sweet.
But having those conversations with men always intrigues me as well, because I'm like, I talk about sex the way that I talk about sex in the book and life, and it's the same. I have no problem addressing that in either a very academic or very personal manner, but asking sort of particular questions to guys, or if something would come across and I'd be like, so like this happened to me, what do you think? And they'd be like, what? You want me to share like the bad stuff or the sort of awkward stuff or the questionable moments? I'm like, yeah, like that's an exchange in general. That's sort of what happens when you talk to someone. And I find it very interesting that it either stops right there, it's either shut down immediately, like in a ha, good story, gotta go way.
Have a driving lesson.
Yeah. Or then it becomes this really healthy conversation that sort of for me always looked like, again, it's just my experience of someone else's experience, that it was sort of revelatory.
Right. Yeah.
It was just this massive sigh of like, you mean I can talk about this? Like, this does happen. And it's not only just my experience that I couldn't share with someone, because why would I talk about this if it's only me and there's not an actual problem? Which is exactly what you said before about toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
So I think that encouragement of actually going to people who might display subconsciously or consciously those traits and be like, all right, so like, do you want to talk about that time that your dick wasn't hard? Like, why would that happen? You know, like, because we talk a lot about all kinds of like things in terms of sex, but for me, it's just, you know, we're like, oh, women, you know, I watched this video of this woman going around a park and asking guys like, so, like, when's the last time you had sex? How did you know it was over? And did she orgasm?
Wow.
And so, how did you know it was over? Well, I came, so it was over. And did she orgasm? I don't know. It was, like, 80% of the answer.
Holy shit. Yeah, that didn't surprise me.
At all. As a woman, I was like, yep, that's fair enough.
Sounds about right.
And so, I think that's the comfortable questions to ask a guy, because they'll give you the answers, even if then they'll might, you know, be like, oh, shit, I don't know why. I don't know if they orgasmed or not. But the whole, like, you know, as women, we know that it happens to a lot of guys on a lot of different occasions for a lot of different reasons that there is no erection. And we're not, like, chastising them, because we are used to not having things function on our end, quote-unquote function.
Yeah.
And so it's just, like, for me, that's really interesting, because you're tapping into exactly that root of the confidence and expectation of behavior and expectation of, you know, what a man looks like and does, and so I think it can just be helpful for everyone to have more of those conversations, whether they are about sex or not.
Yeah,
because that just roots back to that, and it's not, it's complete. I think everyone feels better after talking like that.
They do. And speaking of how men talk about sex, this was another thing that made me want to vomit with despair, was when Donald Trump disclosed that thing about grabbing women by the pussy.
Yeah.
Nigel Farage, who we all know is a venomous, destructive little shit weasel of a man, he defended the comments in public, saying, I think the term he used was, it was alpha male locker room talk. I don't know why he didn't have an angry mob outside his house as soon as he said that, because again, it's about this complicity and just accepting not just a certain form of behavior, but accepting, oh, well, that's how men talk.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's really interesting.
Him defending it was, to me, 10 times worse than Trump's fucking bragging. Without a doubt. 10 times worse. Because we all know that he's a fucking massive bellend. But to have someone defending that bellend behavior, regardless of to whatever end, because you want a political ally or you want to be on the winning team or the strongest side, I just find that horrifying. I don't know why he wasn't tarred and feathered and run out of town.
And that just shows that how far we are from actually getting to that point where guys can actually say, like, actually, I disagree with that. Fuck that. I would never say that.
No, completely.
Screw you.
And I didn't, you know, you'll see condemnations of it on the Guardian website, but you wouldn't see it in the Times or the Telegraph necessarily. I could be wrong. I didn't read all those volumes.
But more than that, I think on an individual level, you wouldn't see a bunch of guys sitting around the pub going, what a horrible thing Farage said.
Yeah, completely. Completely. Everyone just shrugs and then goes, well, yeah, what are you going to do? It's banter, innit? I fucking hate that word. I really hate that word. Yeah. You should only use banter when you're talking about fucking Shakespeare or something, like a back and forth between Beatrice and Benedict or some shit. But that is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I think we should come up with some uplifting information at the end of this.
We should. We should. So to everyone listening to this right now, however you do it, secondhand on Amazon, preferably not on Amazon because they treat their stuff like shit, but I strongly recommend The Descent of Man, Grayson Perry.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it not brightening up your life, even in a tiny way after you read it, because this is crucial as well. It's not about beating people over the head.
No.
Or creating, and I don't want to get into odierism because, well, you know, men are massive dicks and that's just the way it goes. I think that there is so much potential for positive discourse, and there's so much potential for even if you're just tweaking behavior slightly, I think that over time, and especially across millions of people, that can make such a huge difference.
Yeah.
And what's interesting now is that because there is gradually, there is still a lot of echo chambering going on. There is more awareness. There is slightly more discourse.
Mm-hmm.
But I think now, you know, it's up to individuals to reach out via compassion, via joy, via empathy.
Yeah.
And start challenging things, not to prove that they're right, but to hopefully make the world a slightly less shitty place to be.
Well, and I would go a step further from that, not to prove that they're right, but to prove that there is no such thing as being right.
Yeah, there isn't. No, not at all.
That there is only right for you.
Yeah, exactly.
And for the person across from you that you're interacting with, and for the health of the people you are directly affecting.
Yeah.
And if they're doing better, you're doing better. And that's the loop that we want, not the
one that because, you know, I'm going to go on a podcast and talk about toxic masculinity to show how fucking woke I am.
Change the world.
That's the last thing in the world that I want. If I want to leave people with anything, it's just fucking talking more.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And I, you know, referencing...
And reading more.
Reading more, which is crucial. Which is crucial.
The two writers said to the audience.
No, but I think reading just increases your sense of empathy anyway, as long as it's not fucking Mein Kampf and Nigel Farage's autobiography.
Or 50 Shades of Grey.
Or not 50 Shades of Grey. But it's not for me to tell people what not to read, because who am I to do that? But also, shit, what was my point?
Your point was that we need more empathy.
Yeah, if any kind of skirmish is going to be won, it's going to be won via... reaching out, trying to connect with other people, trying to see things from
really
other people's
connect.
Point of view. Yeah, like properly connect. But that's going to take longer attention spans. That's going to take more energy.
Patience. Work.
And these aren't things that are valued.
And intimacy. I can't stress this enough. And you and I have actually talked about this unrelated. Like the actual presence. Presence as an individual.
Yeah.
Who is with another individual for whatever reason. Like even in an elevator because you're waiting to get to the next floor.
Yeah.
Like, being present in that moment. That's just... Like, it makes you feel better.
It does. It does. Even if you're just asking someone on the fucking checkout at the supermarket how their day's going.
Yeah. Feeling acknowledged and feeling present and being there. I think that's just the littlest things we can do.
Yeah.
I think we can wrap it up here.
I think we can wrap it up here.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast with me.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And you guys can reach out. I will link... James's info everywhere.
I have a hilariously under-maintained Twitter account, which is, right. I guess, the main portal to my stuff. But I don't even fucking signpost that much because I'm hilariously disorganized. But anyway.
But if you want to tweet at him, you can. So it'll be in the description. And
I think it's twitter.com @JamesPeterGates.
Perfect.
And that spells like it sounds, James Peter Gates.
And mine is, as always, Christine Wild_. And if you have any questions, we'll be super happy to entertain and ask more questions and have more talks.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for listening and see you guys next Friday. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.